Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. Joan Pryde is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, longtime member of our Brain Trust, and she joins us every week to talk to us about what's going on in the world today. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Hello there, Jim. Thank you.
It's good to have you back. And Joan, as you now know, we have a little bit of a surprise visitor, but she's always a welcome visitor. Leslie Kossoff is also with us. Ladies and gentlemen, she's reporting to us now from London, where she now lives, as I mentioned earlier. And I wanted Leslie, Joan, to give us a little bit of a report to the best of her ability from where she is on what's happening right now in London. Leslie Kossoff, welcome back to the show.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm sorry under these circumstances, always a pleasure.
We are too. Thank you, Leslie. Say hello to Joan.
Hi, Joan.
Hey there, Leslie.
Leslie, you recently chose to move your business and your residence to London from San Francisco over the last 3 or 4 months. And since you have been in London, have you been using the public transportation system?
Exclusively. I'm not willing to drive over here, and so it's been buses and tubes and taxis for me throughout.
And, of course, the tubes are the underground, the subway
yes.
system.
That's yes,
they
correct.
Call them the tubes over there. How
yes.
have you found the system over there? Is it efficient?
It's a wonderful system. Given how old it is and given the problems that, you know, that simply come with having that old a system, it's amazingly efficient and wonderfully designed. It's really quite a complex and yet easy to maneuver system.
You know, I've been to London a few times and I've used the taxis a good bit, but the only reason I didn't use the subway or the public transportation system is because I didn't know where anything went, and so I actually either took a taxi or drove myself. But Joan, you've been to London quite a bit and you know these the system, don't you?
Oh, the tube is wonderful. It's a wonderful system. It's scary to think that something like that could happen because, of course, you start thinking about the cities in our country.
Right, exactly. And Leslie, tell us some of the stations that you know were hit because some of our audience may actually know those locations.
Well, there are four confirmed locations where bombings occurred, three in the tube system and one on a bus. And they've confirmed that the Liverpool Street, King's Cross, and Aldgate stations, which are all central London, a little bit over toward the city of London. So, you know, and the explosions all occurred during commuter time. It was prime commuter time.
Did they happen fairly close together?
Yes, they did.
To be synchronized?
Yes, it was. All of the hallmarks at this point are that this was a very well-coordinated, very well-planned, synchronized attack on the public transport infrastructure system.
And about what time did they occur?
The first one was reported at 8:49 in the morning.
Okay, right at the
yes.
height of rush hour then.
Absolutely,
yeah.
yes.
And Joan, this sounds like a similar MO to the Spain.
To the Madrid bombing, yeah.
Madrid
exactly.
bombings.
Sure.
Yes, and that's one of the things that's being talked about a lot here. No one's taken
responsibility yet, as far as you know, Leslie?
No, not so far. And there's some speculation that even if it's not Al-Qaeda organized, that it is an Al-Qaeda sympathetic organization that has done this.
Joan, one of the things that's happened now is Prime Minister Blair has disconnected from the G8 conference in Scotland and is returning back to London, which is no surprise. It's the right thing for him to do. But it sounds like if this is something that that they were trying to disrupt the eight nations who are meeting there to try to the leaders who are trying to come up with some plans to help other parts of the world. And of course, you know, maybe include some westernization in some of these countries that need our help. It sounds like maybe that the bombers have had some effect.
They certainly have. It sure sounds that way, unfortunately.
If they've disrupted
no,
it.
I'm going to have to take you back on that one, because what Blair said was that, in fact, the G8 leaders all agreed that they would continue with the meeting while he leaves for a few hours to get briefed at Downing Street, but going back tonight, and the meetings will continue, and they have all stated their commitment to continuing the G8 meeting.
Well, exactly. Well, and thank you for giving us that report, Leslie. No, I didn't mean to imply that they were going to end the G8, but Blair leaving does disrupt them, even just for the day. But I did notice that when they made their announcement that Mr. Bush was on one side of Blair and Chirac was on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
So that was an important thing for those guys to do. Joan, you have any questions for Leslie?
Well, I was just wondering if you have a sense of what the mood is in London now. Have they shut down the entire system? I thought that was something we had heard earlier. I mean, if that's the case, then London is really at a standstill right now.
Yes, the tube system, the underground system, is completely shut down. They don't know when it's going to be reopened. They said definitely not today. They need to get in there and see the extent of the damage. Right now, as far as bus service in central London, that's also stopped because the buses are being used for emergency transport, among other things.
Well, and wasn't there a later bombing of a bus? Also,
there was, and that's one that they're particularly concerned about. That was in Russell Square, because what they think is that it's the first incident of a suicide bomber here in London.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they're talking about a lot here, in terms of the mood and the difference, is that for all of the bombings that this city lived through for so long with the IRA. There was always a warning. There was always a call in advance saying this is going to happen, and at least a chance that people could be evacuated. With these bombings, they're silent, and then suddenly they occur. And so there's a completely different feel to this having occurred, evidently, than the feeling that was going on for so long with the IRA bombings.
Leslie, thank you for being here. Joan, do you have any last questions for Leslie before she
goes? No, I just my heart goes out to the people over there, and of course to those who were killed and injured.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely. Leslie, thank you for being here. God bless you, and you keep your head down over there.
Thank you. I promise I will.
Thank you for this report, and we'll keep thinking about you and all of the folks in England over there.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, Joan.
Bye. Leslie Kossoff, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll have her back. Maybe she'll have another report for us soon if we learn anything else about what's going on over there. Joan Pride, stand by. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Joan. We're going to get into the Kiplinger letter right after these messages. 20 after. Stay with us.
No, I won't be afraid. Oh, I won't be afraid. Just as long as you stand. Then bye.
We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame. The small business advocate, Joan Pride, is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, that was a very interesting visit with our good friend Leslie Kossoff. Thank you for contributing to that that visit with her. And, you know, she told us, folks, during the break, I asked her, I meant to do this on the air, and I ran out of time. I asked her if she had planned on going to work today, because she goes through one of the stations that were bombed. She goes through there, Joan, whenever she goes to the office. She makes that transit.
Well, King's Cross is a huge station.
Exactly. And she said that she actually originally planned to be at that station, or in the tube at least, about the time that the bombs went off, and she changed her mind and decided to go in late today. So I'm glad she did that.
Me too.
Yeah. So what do you think about all that, Joan?
Well, one thing I wanted to talk about was, and I realize this is not as important as talking about the loss of life and the destruction, but you got to think about what it has been like to be Tony Blair this week.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about what he just went through. He was probably on the biggest high of his life, winning the Olympics yesterday. And I guess he thought to himself, well, now I can kind of relax. I can go off to the G8. And
Joan, pardon me, it wasn't just winning the Olympics. It was beating Paris, beating France for the Olympics.
Oh, yeah.
See, that's
a good point.
That's like
a
cherry on top of your Sunday.
Yeah, and it
if you're
like,
English, that's like a cherry on top of
right.
your Sunday.
Right, and also, in addition to it being France, France was expected apparently to win, they say now.
Yeah.
So this was a huge upset. So he goes through that, and he's thinking, well, I'm just going to coast the rest of the week, have a great meeting with the
G8,
and it's going to be a great week. I mean, he's probably finally exhaled for the first time in ages.
Right.
And he gets, and what happens the minute he gets up this morning?
Mm-hmm.
So it's been
a roller coaster week.
Yeah, no kidding.
And I'll tell you, Joan, regardless of how you feel about, anybody feels about Mr. Blair's politics one way or the other, Mr. Tony Blair is a world leader, in my opinion, in the 21st century, par excellence.
Because, you mean because of his standing with Bush on the
No. Mm-hmm. Because I just think because he is the kind of person who sees an issue and he has the courage of his convictions. I mean, I'm telling you, regardless of how you feel about his politics,
mm-hmm.
I admire his leadership style. I think he was a good friend to Bill Clinton. He's been a good friend to George Bush, and in my opinion, you know, those are two different styles altogether. In my opinion, I just have a lot of admiration for Tony Blair.
It's kind of interesting how his political career has kind of been suddenly resurrected, because there were a lot of people writing his political obituary just a few weeks ago.
Oh, exactly, that's well said and well spoken there, Joan. Okay, now to show that I'm the king of segue, Joan. tell us what one of the big issues is in Scotland, where the G8 are meeting. Even as we speak, what's one of the big issues up there this week?
It has to do with global warming, which, as you know, in this country, there's a huge controversy over whether global warming is really exists and is really a problem.
Well, and that apparently was on the minds of Kiplinger this week, wasn't it?
Sure was.
Because
but we took
story.
It a step further. We talk about the Kyoto Pact, but we also talk about how businesses are already taking the lead. They're not waiting to be forced into taking action.
Yeah. Well, and the question to me, Joan, is whether global warming is junk science or not. The question is whether Kyoto Accords is junk policy or not.
Ooh.
And that's, to me, I think that's the big issue. But you guys point out that because we now have so many multinationals. And I think that's an excellent point to make, Joan. I mean, look at Chrysler. One time, Chrysler was a U.S. company. Now
right.
It's a multinational company, isn't it? It's part of a multinational company.
That's right, exactly.
Daimler-Benz, and it's now called Daimler-Chrysler. And so,
right.
So many companies have got multinational connections, and a lot of these companies in other parts of the world are more amenable to the Kyoto Accords than have traditionally the U.S. companies. That's what you guys are reporting, isn't it?
That's right.
So what do you think? Are these companies going to wind up caving?
Well, I guess we're not thinking of it as caving so much as sort of being ahead of the curve.
Yeah. Well, what do you think is going to happen? Is when you say ahead of the curve, you're talking about in terms of going ahead and instituting some of the Kyoto-type policies even before the government requires them?
Right. Working to trim greenhouse gas emissions and investing heavily in new technologies.
Well, now, I think that if we're going to comply with Kyoto, that's not a bad method, because that's a corporate decision that will also be made with the interest of surviving and continuing to be profitable.
Right.
But if the Kyoto Accords are implemented and imposed by the government, there won't be any concern for whether the company survives or is profitable. The Accords will have to be complied with.
It's kind of funny, though, because if the specter of the Accords was not out there, maybe some of these companies wouldn't be acting. So it's kind of a chicken and egg sort of thing, I guess.
Right. So maybe just the specter of being out there would cause these companies to find more efficiencies. Maybe to develop new technologies, maybe the specter is a good thing, ultimately. But I certainly, in my opinion, the compliance with Kyoto would be a major disaster for the United States. That's Jim Blasingame, not Kiplinger. 29 after, we'll be right back with Joan Pride. The show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, let's move over and talk about the little graphic that you guys have. It's handy-dandy little graphic that's of some kind on the front page of the Kiplinger Letter every week. This one is the current forecast block, and I like this addition to your letter, Joan.
Okay. Do you like it because – oh, you like it generally because we're giving you kind of a little snapshot, right?
Yeah, I like that. It's very handy because it's got a little two-line, three-line of information and an arrow telling me up or down or sideways, and so I don't have to think a lot. I just look at it, see, Joe.
And I got the inside poop on the arrows. If your listeners are following along with their copy of the Kiplinger letter, they'll see.
Well, they all are, Joan. You know they're sitting there.
Well, that's true.
Can't you hear
that's
the paper
true.
Rustling in your hands?
Right. Some of the arrows are darkly shaded and some of them are light. And I guess if it's lightly shaded, that means that whatever point direction the arrow is going in, it's not going that far.
Right. It may not be a strong number, but we're talking about the direction overall.
Right, right.
Yeah. And what about the arrows that go left and right?
Well, that means pretty much neutral.
They, could go not, either way, huh?
Well, no, it means it's not going to move either way.
Ah, okay. All right.
And we have a new forecast. You didn't mention that, see?
There is a new forecast. Tell us about it.
There is. GDP. We're saying 3.6% growth this year.
How about that? And you know, first quarter GDP was adjusted upward to 3.8.
That's right.
In the first quarter, and which is pretty strong. And, you know, Joan, that's amazing to me when you and I are putting $2.20 or more a gallon of gas in our car, and with interest rates rising now to, to 4% or so on the prime and higher than that, actually 7%, I should say, on prime and higher than that for small businesses. With all that in taken into consideration, the economy, we still got almost 5% unemployment, which is about half of that of Europe. And the economy, you and I have agreed, Joan, I think one of the few things we agree on, even in the 3% range of growth, that's pretty darn solid, isn't it?
Oh, I wouldn't refuse it. I'll take it.
Well, look around. I mean, Europe's less than 2. Europe's going to be lucky to probably, as a whole, probably to be around the 1.5, 1.6 or 7 range.
That's right.
Japan is less than that. So that's pretty darn solid. And so I'm my hat's off to small business owners, Joan, because you know all of this success is a result of small business owners working their little hind ends off over here in the United States.
In a manner of speaking, yes.
And so I'm really proud of you guys. Interest rates have been nudging up. The Fed raised rates last week, didn't they?
Yes, it sure did. Yet another quarter point. How many has this been?
Well,
way too many.
This is 10 in a row, I think, and is
boy.
It 10 in a row, something like that. I'm going to start calling him Alan Johnny One Note Greenspan. He only knows one song. You know, either I'm raising rates or I'm lowering rates, and what we need to do is find out what kind of drugs or food he eats or drugs he takes when we reverse, when we turn and go the other way. We need to make sure he gets some more of that
stuff. He needs a little more nuance in his life, maybe.
Inflation is headed down, Joan?
Well, not according to Mr. Greenspan, but we seem to think so.
Kiplinger says so. Now, it's a light arrow. It's not a big. It's not a bold arrow.
Well,
it's
we
a light arrow.
Just to make sure that your listeners understand, we didn't say inflation is going down. We said that the increase is moderating.
Is that what that arrow means?
Yes.
Looks like a down arrow to me, Joan.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
And but the trade deficit is going up. Employment is going up. You guys say that
you got to read this correctly now. Are you going to give people the wrong impression?
2 million jobs this year.
Yeah.
That's incredible, isn't it, John?
It is.
Very, very impressive. And so that's good news there. Joan, let's move over and talk a little bit about in the States. Some things that are happening in the States, and one of the things that I thought was very interesting, I'm glad you reported this, Georgia and South Carolina are limiting malpractice cases. Tell us about that.
That's right. Jury awards in medical malpractice cases will now be limited to $350,000, and we think that this idea is going to spread to other states. And this is yet another case of the states going ahead and acting when the federal government is sort of stymied and isn't acting.
Right, right. And also Georgia is in the news below that because they're working on anti-spam laws too, aren't they?
That's right. And we're saying that it would be a felony in Georgia to make sending large quantities of spam out to people. Mm-hmm. And you could get 5 years in the slammer.
And that large amount, says, according to Kiplinger, is 10,000 per day, 100,000 a month, or a million a year. That's a little bit less than my distribution, Joan.
Okay.
I don't know about you guys, but mine it is. Quick break, 20 minutes. No, it's 20 till. We'll be right back with Joan Pride. More to come after these messages. Stay with us.
Hello, stranger.
We're back. 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate, and Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, your website is kiplinger.com, isn't it?
It sure is.
And they can subscribe.
That's right.
They can subscribe to your all your letters there, the Kiplinger letter, the weekly letter, the three biweeklies, the California, the tax, and the agriculture letter.
Right.
And also, there's a magazine, isn't there?
That's right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And I encourage, Joan, give us that phone number where they can subscribe as well.
Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
And don't forget to ask them for the 30-day free trial. I worked really hard to get that for you, too, folks.
So I bet you did.
Don't pass that up. Joan, let's move down and talk a little bit about I thought this was a funny little story here in the health section, Joan. You guys point out that there are going to be new rules for drug ads. Tell us about that.
Well, you mean the fuller disclosure?
Yeah, yeah. I just think this is funny.
Yeah, as if we need this. More information on side effects.
So
as if we don't have enough information now.
Well, haven't you heard the commercials?
I have.
Where they advertise for some drug and then...
Scares the heck out of me.
They have about a 10-word message, and then about 55 seconds is on the side effects.
That's
now,
right.
How are they going to do more of that? I don't know.
They'd need a much longer ad, I think.
Right. Another thing in the area of health, Joan, is some companies are starting to become a little bit more like our mothers, maybe nagging us a little bit to eat more veggies. What's going on with that?
Well, this is interesting. Yeah, we're saying it's not just your mother telling you to do that. They're trying to encourage. Well, they're not telling people to eat veggies, but making more vegetables and salads available in the company cafeteria, and maybe putting more healthy stuff in the vending machine. That's certainly what's happening in my company.
Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So your company is incenting people. Are they doing more than just recommending?
Well, they're offering.
Is a Brussels sprout casserole cheaper than a hamburger, or what is it? What's going on?
Well, they're offering healthier choices in our company cafeteria.
Ah, and that the companies are seeing a direct benefit to the profitability and the success of the company because of the increased health of their employees, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. It just makes sense.
You know, we've had companies on this show, Joan, over the last few months. That over the last 20 years, I mean, these people have been doing this for 20 years. They've actually, because they were way ahead of the curve, they were visionary in this area. They've actually, where the rest of us were experiencing, double-digit increases in healthcare expenses, they became self-insured, and their increases were only about 4 to 5%.
Wow, that's pretty good.
That's a direct impact. Not only were their employees healthier. They helped them stop smoking and that sort of thing. Not only were their employees healthier, but the company benefited. So it's a good thing, and it might be something for more folks to look into. I'd encourage you to do that. Joan, let's move over to page 3 and talk a little bit more about energy. This is with regard to the effect of higher energy prices on the economy. What's Kiplinger say that we're going to be looking at there?
Well, we're saying that oil prices are going to go over $60 a barrel again, and it wouldn't take much to push it up there just because the supply situation is so tight.
Well, we have crossed 60 one time so far, I think. But aren't we going to have to go to 90 a barrel to get to the point where we were 25 years ago, the high?
Right. The really big milestone we say is $88 a barrel.
88. So, well,
so fortunately, so far we're a long way off from that.
And you know, Joan, I read something recently that where it doesn't seem that high petroleum prices is derailing the U.S. economy, it does seem to be having an impact on the European economy.
Well, that's interesting.
I saw a report the other day that said that they directly connected the higher petroleum prices to the inability of that economy to recover. It wasn't the only thing. They just identified it as a factor. But Joan, here's the thing. I think you and I both agree that our economy, U.S. economy, does not need to grow at 5% or you know, for very long. That's actually overheated, isn't it?
Well, you know, if Alan Greenspan is acting this way in this economy, I don't know what he'd do with a 5% growth.
Retire early, probably. but the thing is that, you know, wouldn't it be ironic if the oil prices are preventing the EU from growing at a rate that's really healthy, and maybe these rates are actually holding the lid on the U.S. economy?
That is kind of ironic.
What do you think?
Could be.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, you heard it here first, by the way, folks. Joan, the new bankruptcy law, according to Kiplinger, is a mixed blessing for small businesses. And I guess it depends on whether you're taking bankruptcy or someone's taking bankruptcy on you, doesn't it?
Right. And even if you're taking bankruptcy, there's two schools of thought on this. What we're saying is the small businesses that file for bankruptcy get only 180 days to submit their reorganization plans. But a lot of what they're putting in the law for bankrupt small businesses, or I should say businesses going into bankruptcy, is designed to make the process more efficient, because I think in the past you had small businesses that kind of languished in bankruptcy court for
right.
too long.
Right.
And that there's no reason for that to be happening.
180 days is plenty of time. That's 6 months.
Sure.
And whatever imposition that makes on companies that are taking bankruptcy, it is an advantage, it is a benefit for companies that are waiting to get their money from those bankrupt companies
sure.
and trying to get something out of them. So I think I see that actually as a good thing overall on balance. Quick break, 10 till, right back with Joan Pride. We got more to come after these messages. I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with us. Must be a Joe Cocker kind of day. Joan Pride is with us. She's a big Joe Cocker fan, aren't you, Joan? Hello, hello?
Oh, yeah.
Joan, let's move over to page 4 and talk about the Supreme Court. This is one of my hot buttons right now. The Supreme Court is not at least 5 of them are not among my favorite people. They passed some things recently that really ticked me off. One of them is the Kelo versus New London case. And have you been tracking that one, Joan? You familiar with that?
Well, I mean, I've heard of it, but I have not been covering it.
The Kelo versus New London case, folks. And by the way, my column this week is going to be about this issue. It'll be in my newsletter. It'll be also in my newspaper syndication. Joan, you guys referenced this a little bit this week, and I hope you'll cover more of it in the future. This is a case, Joan, where 115 property owners, including Wilhelmina Derry, who has lived in this home that she's in now all of her life, all of 87 years of her life. It's been in her family over 100 years. And that her home and others and some small businesses, their homes were condemned by New London not to build a road, not to build an airport, not to build a bridge or a highway, but to be then transferred to private companies to develop as a commercial development. Joan, the takings clause of the Fifth Amendment has always been that the eminent domain was to allow, as you know, to allow the government to put a railroad through your property, and they'd have to pay you for it.
That's right.
Wasn't anything you could do about that. But they would have to compensate you.
Think of a railroad, good example, as being a public conveyance or a road or something like that.
Right.
It's obviously for the public good.
At the federal level, eminent domain, up until this last week, has always been assumed, and the precedent has always been that it was for public use, not from. In fact, there are many precedents where a government tried to take a property from A and give it to B. That was the words that they used, and that the courts turned that down. But now, 5 of the 9 Supreme Court justices sided with New London, and they're allowing them to take property from private citizens and sell it to other private citizens. Joan, what do you think about that?
I'm not saying I agree with this, but is the thinking that there is still a public good there because the economic development will increase the economy there and increase tax revenue?
Well, right,
but
Sandra Day O'Connor, you know what she said about that, don't you?
No.
She said that basically this now means that any farm can become a factory. Any small business could become a Walmart. I'm paraphrasing her.
Yeah.
But part of her exact words were, any Motel 6 could now be made to become a Ritz-Carlton.
I take it she was dissenting.
She was dissenting. She wrote for the dissent, exactly.
Yeah.
But the thing, Joan, you're right. What the new justices, the majority basically said was, they've redefined public use as public good.
I see. Yeah, well, and that's the thing. That's going to be a very squishy standard.
Well, and see, that's exactly right. And see, what they've also done, Joan, is they've kicked it back to the states and said, let each state decide how they want to comply with this. Well, states have been, states have been, and local municipalities, they've been doing this for a long time. They've been taking land and giving it to other private entities. They've been doing this a long time.
Right.
Those people just haven't taken it to the Supreme Court. It hasn't been tested in the Supreme Court before this, because it was always kind of assumed that the Supreme Court would be strict in their construction of, in their interpretation of the takings clause, meaning it has to be for public use.
Right.
But now we know that that's not the case.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah.
And I think there are a lot of property owners out there that need to be paying attention to what their states are doing about this. Joan, quickly, we only have 30 seconds, and I'm sorry about this. Other court issues, the two reporters. You want to give us your 30-second take on that?
Well, I can give you say goodbye to the First Amendment as far as I'm concerned. I know a lot of people will disagree with me because they will say that the reporter who was jailed should not have been protecting someone who could theoretically be breaking the law, depending on what the grand jury finds out. But I think you need to have a free press who can protect their confidential sources in order to keep the First Amendment going.
And this is where the two reporters refused to reveal their sources,
what was being revealed was the identity of a CIA operative who should not have been revealed.
Well, the thing is, regardless of this particular issue, the merits of one side or the other, Joan, I agree with you about your comment about the First Amendment. I think this is a mistake, and we'll report on this some more in another day. Thank you, Joan, for being here.
Good job today.
Quick, got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame. This program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.